Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me is Mr. Spencer Kaboom Williams.
Hey, what's up, Eddie?
What is up, man? We got a great show in store for the people today because we're going to be talking about an actual movie that I think we actually both enjoy, because I think we've had a string of movies where we've actually struggled with finding good things to say about them. So, yeah, we're going to be talking about the latest entry into the Toy Story franchise, and that is Toy Story 4. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spence, give it to him.
Just because you're a toy that switches owners and now has found your lost love and are looking for a disposable eating utensil turned toy and can't seem to figure out... You know what? Never mind. You can always be sure, however, that the Filmlosophers podcast will always be brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. New episodes are one either from a carnival or just by downloading to your device each Wednesday morning.
Let's make it easy for them. Just
just a little bit. And streamed on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, and Audio Boom.
Boom, boom.
You've
boom.
Got a friend in me. I mean us. Connect with us on Facebook. At facebook.com/filmlosophers. Hey, you know, it's all about that friend count going up, man. And on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Finally, you can always visit our Second Chance Antique Shop and peruse our library. We've got plenty to go through. Check out our entire list of episodes at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got over 165 different episodes ready for you to listen to. Last week, we talked about Men in Black International.
You know, that movie just kind of flies out of your head.
It's like, oh my gosh, we did. So you can check that one out after you're done with this one. Lesson 166. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. We're on week two without Chad, and I think we're managing. Only one or two things have caught on fire.
Yeah, that's a lot lower than I thought.
It's true. However, within the new change, there has been a new consistency happening with the show, and I don't know how to say this, but we're kind of on a Will Smith streak now. So, and mind you, this song has nothing to do with the movie we're going to be talking about.
It's Will Smith month here at the Filmlosophers. Despite him being in none of the movies reviewed.
That we know of. But mind you, yes, it is summertime. The summer solstice has started, which officially kind of kicks off summer, June 21st. And so seeing as it's summer now, it's summertime, we are now well into the summer months, the blockbusters, and we're kicking it off with a review of Toy Story 4. If the film really needed another film entry into this whole franchise, then that was beyond me. I don't know why, but they made another one and they released it. So before we get into that, Spencer, with this music in the background, give him the official synopsis.
Super appropriate. Woody has always been confident about his place in the world, and that his priority is taking care of his kid, whether that's Andy or Bonnie. But when Bonnie adds a reluctant new toy called Forky to her room, a road trip adventure alongside old and new friends will show Woody how big the world can be for a toy.
Very true. Directed by Josh Cooley. And from a screenplay, actually from Andrew Stanton, who actually did the screenplay for the first three.
Okay.
The film stars the voices of Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Annie Potts, Tony Hale, Keegan-Michael Key, Jordan Peele, Madeline McGraw, Christina Hendricks, Keanu Reeves, Ally Mackie, Jay Hernandez, Laurie Allen, and Joan Cusack. This film actually marks Josh Cooley's directorial debut, so it's his first outing as a director. Mm. Simultaneously, however, this film also marks John Lasseter's final involvement with Pixar Animation Studios before he exits the Disney company as a chief creative officer. So, take that as you will. Another tidbit, the legendary comedian and voice of Mr. Potato Head, Don Rickles, passed away in 2017 before he was actually able to record his part as a classic toy from the upcoming Toy Story 4 film. Rickles' family reportedly contacted the studio and asked if there was any way that they could create a performance using the recordings that they already had. So, that's exactly what the studio did, using the recordings from not only the previous three films, but also the video games, theme parks, and other things. They were able to craft a whole new performance. So that was actually really cool. And there's a lot of great little tidbits and Easter eggs in this movie. Here's the thing. I wasn't really a huge proponent for an additional movie in this franchise.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that you can kind of recognize from the first film, it's like, okay, it's good enough. I think this, like, if you've seen Toy Story 3, like, that was heart-wrenching. In all honesty, like, you're watching, like, oh my god, these toys are gonna die, and then, oh, Andy's living, and, you know, and you're...
See, I've watched, like, Toy Story 1 and 2 multiple times. I have only watched Toy Story 3 once, and I want to keep it that way.
And it's hard because of the fact that you're watching a movie that, honestly, has been around for over, like, 20 years. More than 20 years, like 30 years.
Yeah, the first one was from 96, I believe.
I believe it was 96. So you got 30 years, almost 20 years?
30 years. 20.
20 years. You got 20 years of a film that you've grown up with, practically. Like, in all honesty, we were young when the first film came out.
Yeah.
That's kind of a dumb thing to say. But yeah, we were younger. We were kids when the first film came out. And growing up with this, I mean, now we're at an age, and I hate saying this because then it makes me feel old, but we're both at an age where we could have kids that...
Why are we going down this road?
I just... This movie does this to you, man. I don't know. But honestly, I mean, let's just be real. We could be at a place where we could be having kids at this particular age where they're now experiencing Toy Story, like we did when the first film came out.
Yeah, that's just a real full circle that I really don't need to be doing with any movie.
This is one of those ones you're like, this is like Star Wars all over again. Like, oh my gosh, my dad is crying every time we go to the movies. But yeah, I mean, you have a great cast of characters, a great vocal cast in this film, starting with real big heavy hitters out in, like, back in 1996 with, like, Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. You had, obviously, Don Rickles. You had John Ratzenberger. You had, what's her name, Annie Potts. I mean, all these people have been a part of the franchise for this entire time. Mind you, Annie Potts, I don't believe Bo is in... I don't remember Bo being in the second film.
Bo's not in the third film.
Okay, it's only the third film.
Yeah.
So she's in the second film.
Yeah, but I think she's a background character for the most part.
Possibly. But, like, all these people have been a part of this saga, back to that word that we've been using the last 2 days.
Saga!
You know, it's a part of this huge franchise that continues to grow. So it's really interesting to see that now we're in a space where these movies are going to continue, sadly. Because you know, and we'll get to that whole... whether or not they will or not, but honestly, they're going to still want to make money. They're going to squeeze blood out of this stone kind of thing.
Okay, my only thing is, like, as long as they have a good story to go along with it.
Probably not.
Generally. Well, probably like, not. They've, like, Toy not. The Toy Story series has been, like, pretty, like, high up there
with
sequels that don't suck.
But they're pushing it. Like, they're really
pushing it, but
they haven't
crossed that line yet.
Real quick, a little bit of info on the numbers. The budget for this film was estimated around $200 million. Its domestic opening weekend, so this past weekend, it did about $120.9 million.
Mm.
Worldwide totals as of today, as of actually today, is around $258.6 million estimated. So the film's doing rather well. I mean, it's a Disney film.
It's not a surprise.
But no surprise at all.
Especially Toy Story. Like.
Especially Toy Story. And that goes back to, like, what we were talking about. Like, this is one of those types of movies where, like, in similar vein with Marvel, you're capitalizing on a franchise or a property that has been existing for a large enough amount of time to where you have people who have seen it when they were kids, that are now having kids that are seeing this one.
Yeah.
So you're like, you're hitting all markets. You're hitting the nostalgia factor and you're hitting the new, you know, new generation factor. And I think that's what Disney's, you know, does. That's what they do. And it's kind of scary because it's like, dude, what is it that Disney hasn't done yet that they're going to start overtaking, you know?
No, see, after a while, like, they can just go in a big loop and be like, oh, this is new. No one has seen this before, but it's really the same thing that just came out 100 years ago.
This is new. I don't know, Spence. But it just goes to show, like, the power of the House of Mouse. I mean, you got somebody like, John Lasseter, who was doing things within the company such as this Toy Story franchise all the way back in 1996, and you have the power of that story just being perpetuated every so often to create more and more movies out of it, leading to 2019's release of the fourth entry in the entire franchise. And I'm going to be, like I said earlier, I'm going to sound like a broken record probably throughout this entire review. I really think they should have stopped at 3. That's not saying that number 4 is bad. I'm just saying number 3 was a superb place to stop at.
That's because number 3 just wrapped everything up in such a nice bow to just, like, you know, it's Toy Story's circle of life right there. You know, you have one kid, like, they donate you to another kid, you know, a monkey raises Woody up into the sky, and then everyone's happy. Like, that's the circle for Toy Story that they set up. So it's like...
You mean the circle of life?
Yeah, I said that already. Listen, Eddie.
I am listening.
So it's kind of jarring to just be like, hey, we're doing another movie, when it seems like you've really said all you had to say for the most part.
Well, and you would think that that would be enough. That would be like, okay, we're closing the chapter, technically the book, on this particular story thread.
Yeah.
Like, because the important thing in this franchise is the kid, I would assume. Like, the story and the fun that the toys are having, that's grand and everything. But the focus is the kid. And they make every effort to show that importance. But then now it's like, all right, now we're with Bonnie and let's get the story going with Bonnie and, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like I said, that goes to like where we came from growing up with going to the theaters and seeing like part one and experiencing part one and getting it on VHS or DVD when it eventually came out on DVD.
I still have the VHS.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I used to have the VHS too. And then when part two came out and we were older, but we were like, oh yeah, I remember that was my jam growing up. Oh my gosh, whatever. And then coming to a place where you have part three, and we were all crying in the theaters. And it's like that meme that always comes out, like, you know, of Adam Sandler in Billy Madison, where he's like the oldest kid in kindergarten. And they're like, me when Toy Story 4 comes out in the theaters, like you're a old man in the middle of like a bunch of kids.
Yeah. This is really true.
We're circling back, Spence. We are circling back. So with all that said, let's talk about expectations, because you know what, there are a few different areas where we can pull from in terms of expectations, but in all honesty, a lot of it is going to probably be based on the nostalgia factor, where we all fall in line with what part of this film resonates with our past. For some, it's actually watching the movies. For others, it's the actual toys. You know, people who are like, oh my God, my favorite toy growing up was the Mr. Potato Head. And, you know, or people who resonate, I don't know, with the whole, like, the battle during the 50s and 60s with between cowboys and space toys kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's different arcs to kind of, you know, reflect from in terms of this particular film and what sets the expectations. So I'll go ahead and start it out first in terms of expectations for this film. Like, one of the biggest things for me in terms of expectations was I wanted to make sure that there was going to be a better film than what we saw out of 1, 2, or 3.
Mm-hmm.
Because Michael Eisner and John Lasseter, a lot of the people behind the Toy Story franchise thus far, have stated that they weren't just going to do another Toy Story for the heck of it, that they promised the fans, quote, they were not going to consider it unless it was a really good story, unless the product that they were going to present was going to be better than the first, second, and third film. Mm-hmm. So holding them to their promise, I was really hoping to see something spectacular, see something really fun, see something that really just blows you away, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what they said.
Yeah.
And thus far, like you mentioned, Pixar hasn't really failed us much.
Yeah, not there's not like some massive backstabbing failure that exactly. stands like, out from the studio.
Like as I'm thinking about it, like I think it'll be harder to think of films that I didn't like.
Yeah, that is a hard question right
so there. That's the expectation set by them, so that's my expectation set for this movie. Mm. What about you?
Okay. So I was not really looking forward to this movie. Simply the fact of how number three ended.
Oh my gosh.
If they thought they could top that end, no, I don't want to see it. It's just too much. I don't want to deal
with it. You can't do this to me. You can't.
Yeah, so
I will not cry in a movie theater over a kids movie again. I swear.
Yeah, so like that was my like slight fear for this movie is that it was just going to be somehow like more of that. And that was my because like I didn't think this was a cash grab or they were just going to like not do something well done because, you know, Pixar has a great track record. So
they do. They do.
So, yeah, I was mostly just worried about that. That was really my only fear about this movie. Gosh.
So, okay. And mind you, like, it's true. Toy Story 3's storyline was incredible, to say the least.
Mm-hmm, but, you, like, when you're done watching that movie, though...
Oh, you are emotionally exhausted. You're like, I need ice cream.
Yeah.
I need ice cream and a bunch of, you know, try not to laugh videos on YouTube, like mm-hmm. just to really kind of put.
And that was before, like, you know, that challenge even started on YouTube.
Okay, I need ice cream and vines, just a ton of vines.
I think that's before that too.
Oh my gosh! Oh man! but nevertheless, I think it's safe to say that, like, because of the fact that we were there when the first film dropped. We were at the theaters. We were there, you know, on those opening nights. We actually saw it back in 1996 in the theaters. Oh my gosh, this is how, like, Star Wars fans are. Like, well, I was in the theater back in 1978, and you know what? We didn't have, you know, the intranet to see the trailers for these dang movies, and we had to go to the movies to see the trailers. I actually had somebody tell me that one time.
Sounds like a riveting conversation.
It was really good until he fell asleep. no, but like it's. Yes, I feel old for saying it, mm-hmm. and I'll admit it. But it's also kind of that ownership that we have as longtime fans to say that, like to say, you know what? No, I was there in the beginning. I remember when this film dropped. I remember going to McDonald's. And having, like, aside from your regular Happy Meals toy, McDonald's was selling the large Woody and the large Buzz, you know, at the restaurants. Like, huh. You could buy, like, the full-size Woody and the full-size Buzz, and I got a Buzz Lightyear, and it was cool. and I remember that, and I remember the experiences of, you know, seeing part two and then part three, you know, as the years continued. I remember being in the theater in part three, and when Woody or when Buzz reaches for Woody's hand, I think I reached for the stranger's hand next to me, like, no, they can't. So, I mean, it's one of those experiences that you can't remove, you can't eliminate from your mind. Like, you see all the crazy fandom of Star Wars fans and you know, Back to the Future fans and people who have been lifelong you know, just cheerleaders of this whole franchise and the success of it. You can see where a lot of their, I don't know, their gusto, their you know, their ganas, in Spanish they're called ganas, you know, of of seeing a lot of that come to the forefront, mm-hmm. you know, where their passions lie. It's because, shoot, this is all a part of their upbringing. So,
yeah, I had a lot of toys as well. Like, my mom got me and my sister, like, a talking Buzz Lightyear and Woody, and they talk to each other.
That's creepy.
It was amazing.
That's creepy. Speaking of which, we're going to go see Child's Play soon, so.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Side note, speaking of, you know what, I'll save it for another time. It's a good story. But it's not one of those things that we can just eliminate, like, as we talk about this conversation, mind you, two things to keep in mind. Number one, this is all based in, like, our nostalgia. These movies, everything that we're going to be talking about, everything that we're going to be seeing, I'm going to be seeing it through the lens of, like, everything that I've experienced with this franchise thus far. Like, I will speak towards things that are like, yeah, this was all right, that was cool, this was that, whatever. Secondly, this review will have spoilers, so be warned. We'll keep the spoilers towards the end, but we're not going to reveal too much, just enough to kind of get the story across. But there will be slight spoilers in this conversation. So anything to add before we begin?
No, I'm ready to go.
All right, let's do this. So jumping into the film does start many, many years ago. It doesn't really, I don't know if it gives a date.
It's 9 years ago.
9 years ago, whatever. 9 years ago, there's a storm happening and Andy accidentally leaves RC outside and, you know, Buzz is like, or I'm sorry, you know, Woody's like, leave no toy behind, and he goes and he uses a sling, jumps down, and with the help of Bo and Buzz and everyone else, he's able to rescue RC out of there and get him to safety, but not before Mom closes the window, and which is weird because she doesn't see this slinky dog outside, you know, leaning out the window.
This mom is the most unobservant parent.
Really?
Like the last couple of weeks on Filmlosophers has just been unobservant parents.
Is that the theme of the summer?
It's the theme of this month.
I'm like, parents, keep an eye on your kids at the pools, because apparently this is a running theme this year.
Yeah, so like, she's never notices anything strange in any of these movies.
I wouldn't be surprised if like Andy was just like, I don't know, there's just so many things you could wonder. So essentially, Woody is able to get RC into the house, but not before Mom closes the thing behind him, and he gets knocked outside. He gets stuck outside, but he sees Bo Peep getting tossed into a box, the whole lamp, her sheep in the lamp, and he recognizes, you know, that the box is being by someone's car, and the guy forgets his keys, goes back inside, and he's like, no, I can save you. And she's like, no, it's okay. There's another kid. I'll go out there, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're not my dad. And so... And so she even offers, like, the opportunity for Woody to go with her. But he's like, no, I'm Andy's toy. Come on. And eventually chooses not to go. So that happens. And then this whole montage of Andy playing with Buddy and Wood. Buddy and Wuzz?
Yes.
Woody and Buzz.
There you go.
throughout the years as they continue on and he grows up, handing them off to Bonnie. And then Bonnie now has him. Bonnie's kind of in this kick where she's not really big on playing with Woody, but she likes to use the sheriff badge for Jesse and Jesse be the sheriff. And Woody's kind of struggling with this. You know, I used to be the manager of the toys.
I used to be the favorite toy.
The favorite toy. He used to, whatever it is that kept an eye on the toys or whatever like that. He used to do something like that. And now it's Dolly's kind of role in this house, and it's kind of a transition for him. He's kind of struggling, and it's kind of highlighted on one of the mornings when Bonnie decides to take all the toys out except for Woody, and the only thing she takes from Woody is his badge to give to Jesse. One of the things that this film does really well is it does a lot of great little Easter egg drops and little tidbits here and there. I don't know if you got a chance, Spencer, to see any of the IMDb stuff for the movie.
I did not. I'll have to go look it up.
Well, one of the great things about this movie is, and the only reason why I'm talking about it is because it's actually really funny. When he's in the closet, because all the other toys got sent to they got played with, and he's left in the closet, he's actually in there with a few other toys that are... older toys. They're made for younger kids, and the toys are actually older actors.
Yeah. Okay. So like, so
that is awesome.
I didn't make that connection until the end credits when I was
watching.
Like, I was like, wait a minute. When were like? So, and who are these people?
Yeah. So you got this old timer. It's like an old school clock played by Alan Oppenheimer, who is an older performer. Let me see. He's an older actor. You got this chair, this little kid's chair. The name of the chair is Cheryl Burnett.
Yeah.
And obviously you can figure out who voices Cheryl. You have a rhinoceros that is named Carl Reiner Rhinoceros, which is obviously voiced by Carl Reiner. And then you have this teething toy, this teething tiger toy named Bitey White, which is played by Betty White, which is awesome. And then you have the best one out of all of them. By far, hands down, this is the toy that I wish I could have every day in my house. There is a elephant in there that goes by the name of Melephant Brooks. How do you go wrong with that? You don't. You don't. That is awesome. I want that Melephant.
The Melephant? That's going to be your phrase for the year, sir.
I want that Melephant. So, but it's funny. Those little things you don't really notice, but you hear it. You're like, huh. Like, Cheryl, you hear Carol Burnett's voice coming out of the chair, and it's like, oh, I see what you did there. That's funny. That's cute.
Yeah, see, I didn't have enough time to piece it together. I was like, I feel like I know this. And then the story moves on, and I'm like, huh. It wasn't until the credits. That's when I was like, of course.
Sounds like you're not a diehard, Spence, but it's okay.
All right, whatever. You want to do this podcast by yourself?
Never. So, but a lot of those little great tidbits, you know, it's just awesome to see those little things throughout the film. The story goes on where Bonnie is going to kindergarten. She's going to have she's kind of struggling already with going to kindergarten. Dad tells her she can't bring any toys, but Buzz goes against Dad's rules and jumps into the bag.
Woody,
I'm sorry. Why am I getting these two?
You
know what? Don't start with me, okay? No, Woody.
Woody. Come on, man. It's only week two. You got to keep it together.
You know what? I am going to... You know what? Chad, this is for you. Okay, no. No, so Woody gets into the bag. He goes with her to kindergarten on orientation day, and he ultimately helps her by helping her create, getting her the pieces to help create Forky. Problem is, Forky comes alive and thinks he's trash because that's where he came from, and has this whole existential crisis of what he is and who he is, which Forky's played by Tony Hale.
Which is an excellent voice choice.
I don't know if this is a bad thing to say, but he even looks like Tony. So if you're not familiar with Tony Hale, just think Arrested Development.
Yeah.
All day, every day. So the story goes, after the first day of kindergarten, they take this week-long trip, because it's only orientation, so they got time. Take a week-long trip, and they take all the toys, and, you know, Forky's on this, like I said, existential crisis where he's like, I'm trash, I should be thrown away, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, the movie glosses over this whole process of just a child being able to give sentience to trash. Like, that's kind of a big deal.
And it's almost like the movie makes fun of itself at a certain point in time later down the road when, like, he's actually asked the question, like, why am I alive? He's like, I have no idea. And it's like, oh, okay, so we're not the only ones that are confused. So, ultimately, Woody spends the entire trip trying to keep Forky from, like, throwing himself out the window or going to the garbage can. Forky ends up succeeding and going out the window of a moving vehicle. Woody follows him to try to get him back to Bonnie, and they end up stopping by this antique shop and seeing Bo's lamp in the window. Thinking that Bo is in the shop, they go in there, run into Gabby, which, mind you, I don't know if you know this, but there used to be a doll back in the 50s called Chatty Cathy.
Oh.
Yeah, there used to be a Chatty Cathy, so a Gabby Gabby is an offshoot of that.
Okay, I did not know that.
This is where the film kind of takes a little disturbing turn. Because...
Oh, my God.
Because now you have... If anybody has seen Goosebumps...
That, see, that's exactly the thing I thought of when I saw that thing.
If anybody has seen Goosebumps, then... You should be familiar with a certain ventriloquist dummy named Slappy. Slappy is essentially in this movie, and he is scary as all get out. These things do not talk. They moan and groan and grumble. They're like, arr, arr, arr. I was like, what is that?
Plus, they just move in a really weird, like... way. It's like someone's like, it's almost like they're marionette puppets.
Yeah.
And someone's just like,
there's no structure to them internally.
Yeah.
But it's like, there are rag dolls that have more bone structure in them and walking around in this movie than these guys. Why do these guys not, why can't they stand up straight? It does look like they're like marionette puppets.
Yeah. And I'm sure we've seen dolls that had like much less like skeletal structure than these things that looked more rigid.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely. And so these four dummies, and I call them dummies in both senses of the word, but these dummies are essentially the henchmen of this Gabby Gabby doll who was made during the 50s or 60s. And this is where it kind of gets dark, where she finds out the age of Woody and finds that he has a voice box. Now, her voice box, however, is broken. But the record in the voice box works just fine. She just needs a new device for it. And Woody has one. And so she goes full on creeper. She's like, oh, no. No, you're not leaving at all. No. We want you to stay with us.
I was like, when that happened, I was like, I want to leave.
I'm looking around in the theater like, somebody's trying to prank us, right? Am I getting punked? Ashton! Ashton! No. But it's like, that kind of takes a really big turn from what I'm used to with these movies. I don't remember ever getting like freaked out like that. Maybe in the first film. Okay, the first film. But it's not very long. It's like, it waits till towards like the third act of the film in the first movie because you got like the legs.
Of Sid's like bangle of his, toys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, those were creepy.
Yeah.
But you get over it rather quickly.
Mm-hmm.
This is throughout the whole movie.
This is an ongoing threat.
This is an ongoing threat throughout the entire movie. Essentially, Woody makes it out barely alive, but ends up losing Forky in the shop. And there's a small image, or there's a small scene where Woody's being carried away outside of the shop, and he looks through the window. And one of the dolls, one of the Slappy dolls, has their mouth over Forky's mouth and, like, looking menacingly at Woody. I'm like, that is creepy as all get out. Like, if this was a real, like, a live-action movie, that would be the scariest scene in the entire movie.
No. Like, I'm glad it's not, because it would have been worse. So.
Well, I mean, the way they're going with all these live-action remakes, you don't know.
Yeah, I don't. But, like, I would hope... Like, we have to keep the hope alive that they won't put that thing in there.
Keep hope alive. Is that what
you... Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you, Brock. Obviously, Woody is taken elsewhere. He ends up running into Bo, finding Bo after all these years. They have this great reunion. Bo explains to him that she's been a lost toy for 7 years, but she's happy about it. She loves the freedom. She's doing her own thing. She's kind of out there. And he's kind of like, wow, that's not me. I don't think I could ever do that. And he explains like, oh my gosh, I left a toy back at the antique shop. So it turns into this whole rescue thing. The whole film kind of careens into this, you know, plot of Woody trying to break back into the shop, get Forky back so that they can get to Bonnie, whom the other toys are trying to help stall the car to stay there by whatever means. So that way they don't leave because they were supposed to meet at a rendezvous point.
Right.
At this point, Buzz is the next person who jumps out the window to go and find Woody, and he joins up. And like I said, it turns into this large plot of saving Forky, Woody figuring out how he feels about Bo. Gabby, like, still on the hunt for Woody's voice box. Like, literally, she points at his chest. She's like, what I'm after is right in there. And it's like, you are psycho.
See, this is what happens.
You need to be torn apart.
When you don't play with toys for over 50 years.
You and Lotso would have gotten along very well.
Lotso.
So that's kind of the way the film goes. Like, it obviously, this is not... It's not a simplistic story because it's a Pixar movie. There's, mm-hmm. like, all these twists and turns and, you know, and whatnot. One of the things I kind of want to highlight is I love the fact that Tom Hanks sounds like he hasn't changed in over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his vocal ability, his way of portraying Woody in a way that does not seem like it's Tom Hanks. It seems like this is the same Woody that I started out with back in 1996 all the way to 2019.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic.
It is. And it's not one of those cases where it's like, oh, but he's gotten older, so his voice got gravelly, or he's gotten this way because of smoking, or he sounds like this now. Like
he sounds like he's older, so now Woody sounds older type thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and I'm not knocking them. This is not what I'm doing, mm-hmm. but it's kind of really... well compared at the beginning of the film when he's in the closet and you hear like Mel Brooks, Alan Oppenheimer, Carol Burnett, Betty White. You hear a lot of those performers. And mind you, due to age, things like that happen. I'm not saying that, oh, well, because you got old, you're not good. But you can you can hear like the distinct difference in their voices comparatively to how they were like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. You listen to Tom Hanks and Tom Hanks still sounds as spry as he is mm-hmm. vocally from 1996 as he is today. And it's astounding, you know?
Yeah, no. He does a great job. Like, well, actually, a lot of the cast does a great job.
They do.
Like, because it's almost like not much time has passed for, like, this entire, like, crew, which is part of what really helps sell, like, the whole magic of this movie of, like, you know, it's the same characters.
Yeah, no doubt. So, yeah. And you look at Tim Allen. I was just thinking about like Tim Allen is another one that he's been a little bit more. Well, I don't know, like other than his TV show that he was doing, Man of the House or whatever.
Last Man Standing,
Man of the House. It has to do with a man. He grunts. It's all the same. it's like he's been staying busy, but he also sounds just the same as he did then. Like he sounds just like Buzz. Whatever they're, I don't know if it's something that they're doing on Pixar's end or just the fact that the cast and crew that they have still sounds phenomenal because you listen to everybody like John Ratzenberger. John Ratzenberger is one of those ones that's like totally like, oh my gosh, any day now he's going to like start losing his voice and he's not going to be able to do Pixar cameos. And what are we going to do?
That's going to be a sad day.
I try not to think of that because that's really going to break my heart. But like Annie Potts has been herself for ages. Like she always sounds like the same way. And like Wallace Shawn is the one who plays Rex. He sounds like himself, like inconceivable, you know, that whole thing. That's him. Joan Cusack. Oh my gosh, Joan Cusack. I can't look at Joan Cusack and not think Jesse. But the cast, the performance crew that they have for this is incredible. Like everybody that they have that has lasted as long just soars above any expectations. And it's like I was saying, it's difficult to really see that and not have any kind of reservations of like, oh my gosh, well, you're bringing back this person. They haven't really done anything in like the last 10 years. Are they up for it? You know, or take for instance, sadly, unfortunately, Don Rickles. Don Rickles, even up until him passing, has always still sounded like Mr. Potato Head, like Don Rickles in his prime. That's just how he sounds. Like you'd think 2010 Don Rickles, which is just 7 years prior to his passing, out of a span of God knows how long he's been alive, he still sounded like Mr. Potato Head. I'm hungry, okay? I think that's what I figured out. I think I'm hungry. He still sounds like Mr. Potato Head from the first one in 1996. By God, you know, he's a legend in his own right, but it's like they've created an incredible cast that seems to be immortal.
Yes.
I think is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then talking about the old with the new and the new with old, you got great new additions to this one, like we mentioned with Forky being played by Donnie Hale. You also have Giggle McDimples, which is played by the wonderfully funny Ally Mackey. Bonnie's dad and mom, played by Jay Hernandez and Laurie Allen, respectively. Dolly being played by Bonnie Hunt, which Bonnie Hunt always sounds wonderful in voice acting.
Yeah.
Trixie's hilarious. Kristen Schaal, which if you're not familiar with her, she's Louise in Bob's Burgers. Buttercup was one of my standouts for me in this one because he had some of the funnier like moments, played by Jeff Garlin. If you haven't seen Jeff Garlin, he's on The Goldbergs. But Jeff Garlin is hilarious. Like, he's like, we could frame Dad and he could go to jail. And it's like, okay. What were some of the standouts for you with the new cast?
Ooh, the ones you didn't mention.
Yeah, lay it on me. That's why I kind of left it open.
Yeah, Ducky and Bunny, voiced by Jordan Peele and Michael Keegan Key.
Yes, sir.
I love them. Oh my gosh.
I think I mentioned this to you when we went to go see it.
Mm.
Like, I feel like this is probably going to be one of the few times we actually see them come back together to do something funny. Because, as most people know, and if you don't know, Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key are no longer... they used to have a show together called Key and Peele. Mm. But they retired that show. It was on Comedy Central. They retired that show a few years ago and went their separate ways professionally, not personally. And that show was... God,
I love
hilarious!
That like, show so much.
It is incredible, and some of the skits are just so beyond me. Which now, knowing Jordan Peele had like all that kind of stuff, like all the horror kind of things mm-hmm. in him, like it makes sense on a lot of the skits. I'm like, he did that one. Okay, like you mentioned. Side note: you mentioned the Steve Urkel thing yesterday with Steve Urkel and Scooby Doo while we were talking,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking about the Steve Urkel skit, the Family Matters.
Get out of my house, Steve.
Yes. So, seeing them come back together for this movie, I thought was just hilarious. Like, I felt like this was one of the rare moments that we get to see them back together on screen or even in some type of medium. So, I relished in every opportunity to see them. And the great thing is that Keegan-Michael Key is actually a taller guy than Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele is usually the shorter guy of the two.
Yeah.
In this movie, Jordan Peele... is this large bunny type thing, and Keegan-Michael Key is actually this small baby duck known as Ducky. He's like this small thing, and it's like it's hilarious how that whole juxtaposition changes, and Keegan-Michael Key is just the antagonizer like the entire movie. Like, to infinity and my foot!
He just kicks Buzz Lightyear in the head.
But it's hilarious.
It's so great. Like, they have some of the best lines in the movie. And like there's like a few things that happen. And I'm like someone consulted with them. I'm like, hey, what would be a good joke to add? Because there's like some jokes in here that are not like what I call Toy Story jokes that are hilarious.
Yeah. No, like there is a ton of them. In this movie, like the whole plush rush thing, like
plush rush. I love plush.
That
rush.
Was hilarious. Like that story went on and like, come on, don't interrupt. And like, or when they're trying to do like the laser eyes, like it's hilarious. There are so many opportunities and there to hear their voices on stuffed animals like that. It's like, is that what we look like on the inside? It's just so much fluff. It's great. And on top of them too, like also adding to that, like Duke Kaboom, voiced by the incredible Keanu Reeves. That
guy is having a comeback right now.
He is. Well, that's because he's immortal. I mean, you know that, right?
I can't keep up with what the internet is saying about Keanu.
Keanu Reeves is immortal. He's been around for like hundreds of years.
What, so. He's a Highlander now? We don't worry about that.
He's a vampire.
Oh, so that seems worse.
Well, I mean, hey. You don't really know where he lives, do you? So he could be living in a castle in New York. You don't even know.
Are there many castles in New York?
There's everything in New York. So, Keanu Reeves is hilarious, though, as this Canadian daredevil toy, Duke Kaboom, who is jaded by being tossed out by his own kid, Rajon. It's hilarious, his whole, monologue about, it was a commercial. Like, how's a toy going to do the same thing as a commercial? But he tossed me out. And it's hilarious.
It's so good. Also, very expressive from Keanu Reeves.
It is.
I'm like, where is this all of the rest of the time?
You got to wait for the next Bill and Ted movie to come out.
I am waiting for that Bill and Ted movie. I'm ready.
And I don't think any of that humor would have fit in the John Wick movies. So just
Yeah, Merritt had a lot going on there.
Well, and then we also haven't mentioned or talked about, at least, Forky, voiced by Tony Hale.
Can we mention him?
Well, yeah, but Tony Hale has really been primarily known for his work in Arrested Development, but he's done a bunch of other little things. But his ability to display random bouts of self-deprecation and I am trash, I am meant for soups, salads, and then the garbage, and it's this whole his demeanor, when they're waving goodbye at the slappy toys, and he's that he is so terrifying. And it's but it's expertly delivered. It is so on point.
Yeah, they, just overall, all the new characters were really on point.
They were. Even Gabby.
Yeah.
Voiced by Christina Hendricks, made popular by the TV show Mad Men. She's done a couple of episodes of Firefly, so forth, and other things. But her, she's, extremely terrifying. Her, oh, you're not going anywhere.
No,
I don't think so. Mm. It's you're crazy. You're just you belong in the other movie that's coming out at the same time. Chucky is down that hole.
Oh my gosh.
But I think one of the unique and great things about this movie is, as much as there's a little bit more of that horror element in the movie, I still think this movie still fits within the overall heart of the franchise.
Most definitely.
Because it's one thing to look at a film okay, different director, different this, whatever. Because we had a similar situation last week with Lesson 166 talking about Men in Black International and how the franchise that had been previously set within that universe had a very unique vibe. We talk about it at length, listen in on Lesson 166 as we talk about it. And how Men in Black International does not feel like it fits within that same universe. On the other side, this being a film that comes out almost, 9 years later?
Yeah.
Because Toy Story 3 came out in
2010. Mm-hmm.
This film still feels like a continuation of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And very much in that same vein. I don't think at any point in time that I feel like the film deviates in terms of the heart.
No, no.
Everything about this movie still screams Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the 1996 feel. I don't at any point in time wished this could have been more like that, or this could have been a lot, better delivered, or, Woody could have, Woody didn't sound right, or Buzz didn't sound right, or, they didn't give Jesse this, or they didn't do that. Everybody was given their due amount of time. Everybody sounded like they were having fun. And the film feels like it belongs in this universe.
Yeah. It's definitely a part of the universe. And that's a lot of, because of Pixar's quality control. They do a really great job of just keeping all of these Toy Story movies just together in the same basket. So that's kind of Like, even though I was scared of, like, you know, the traumatic ending of 3, like, I wasn't worried about this just being, like, the oddball duckling movie where it was just going to be like, I'm doing my own thing and I can be whatever I want. Like, no, they, like, made sure it fit in with everyone else. And it was great because of that.
Yeah, completely. And at every point of this film, the progression of the story, because one of the things that lacks in story development when it comes to sequels, especially with sequels, is the thing that suffers the most is the story structure.
Mm-hmm.
You usually have a film that, yes, they're making another sequel, but at the same time, because they're so far down the road in terms of sequels, not as much care or not as much effort is put into. The expectation is that, okay, not everybody remembers the first film, or not everybody recalls everything that happens in the first film or the second film because of how much time is spanned. So you kind of see a little bit of degradation in the story structure. You see a little bit of, like, the lackadaisical work behind creating this new story structure. In this film, the story structure was, like, strong. It was very deep. It was very meaningful. Every step of the progression of this story seemed to continue to dive deeper into a larger, like, psychological situation. And I think that's one of the things that you can always attribute to Pixar movies is, like, you go in for, like, a kid's movie. You come out like, oh, my gosh, I need to go see my therapist. Because it's so, like, it's so powerful. Everything that you have going on, like, grips you. You take any Pixar movie, just throw out any Pixar movie, and you're like, oh my gosh, there's a psychological lesson to be learned in that one, or there's an existential understanding to be had of that one. Like, we're not even going to talk about Inside Out. Inside Out is just a way to jack you up. Like, you want a sure reason
Bing
to go.
Bong. You want to make a room full of people cry? You run in there and you just yell, bing bong, and you walk out.
Let's make sure it's the right kind of people. People are like, what the heck is a bing bong? But these movies, they carry such heavy weight to them. And it's like, dude, this is like some heavy stuff. But it's balanced well with like a kid's storyline.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the great things about these movies. You don't have to worry so much about, okay, I'm going to watch this and it's totally going to go over my kid's head, so I'm going to, like, have to be on them to make sure they're paying attention or whatever kind of stuff. Like, no, you can literally sit there with your kids. Your kids are going to be fully engaged because they're looking at all the bright colors. They're looking at all the great characters, looking at all the weird toys. And at the same time, you're like, oh, my God, what am I doing with my life? Like, am I where I should be? Am I like Woody? Am I just spinning my wheels? And like, you find yourself like in that same situation of comparing yourself to this character that has been well displayed for you to see, and not only just see, but like experience their emotional state and be like, oh my God, I'm like Woody. I need to quit my job. It's like kinds of things like that.
Eddie. What kind of revelations are you having during these movies?
All kinds. All kinds. I'm going to go put myself in a box and join the carnival. Like, I don't know. Like, there's just so many. There's just so many things that happen in this movie that you're like, oh, my God. Okay. And mind you, this story does travel through different speed bumps and elements and whatnot. And it does get to like this large climactic point that you really don't expect. Like, I didn't expect to happen what eventually happens with Woody and Gabby.
Ooh. Oh, with Gabby? Yeah, I didn't see that one coming in.
I didn't see a lot of that coming. And it's very interesting choosing to go in that direction after that point. Like, it's like, oh, wow, like that's really unique. It's
also what makes the movie good.
Exactly.
Because they're willing to take risk with their characters and be like, okay, let's do something you're definitely not going to see coming or expect.
Yeah, because it doesn't, it's beyond surprising. You're really at a point where you're like, wait a second, did they just really do that? And it's similar to things like in Coco where you find out, oh, you know, De La Cruz or whatever his name is isn't really the grandfather. It's actually the guy she's been with he's been with the entire time. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, actually, Inside Out, Joy needs sadness because sadness is what's needed so that you can have joy afterwards. Like, oh, or like all these revelations happen throughout every Pixar movie. It's in the same vein here. Like, you're like, oh, wait. Oh, okay. So this is going to happen. And then, she's going to. And you're thrown for an entire loop in that last leg of this movie.
Yeah, there's just loops after loops, especially when, like, you know, that thing happens. You're like, oh, well, then clearly this will happen. And it's like, no. And it's like, what is happening with this movie right now? It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like an emotional override of just all these different emotions, like all these different experiences. You're like, I need a hug. Like, it's true. Like, after the end of the movie, you're like, oh, my gosh. So this is where we're going to go into spoiler territory. So we're letting you know right now, we're going to be talking about spoilers from this point moving forward. So you've been warned.
This is your only warning.
So from this point forward, so after that event happens, Woody is trying to make his way to the RV with Bo Peep and the plush toys and Duke Kaboom because they escaped out of the antique shop.
Right.
So the situation kind of comes full circle, and Woody is at an impasse again where he is tasked with the choice of leaving Bo so that he can go back with Bonnie and the rest of the toys, or he could choose to stay with Bo. And the whole thing kind of like unveils like a very interesting progression of events, because you're watching Woody walk towards the RV and Bo is looking at him from the edge of the carousel where she's at, and Woody's out there to meet him halfway, and Woody's struggling, and Buzz is like, she's gonna be fine. And Woody's like, oh, Buzz. And he's like, no, Bonnie's gonna be fine. And it's like, oh, Buzz is okay with it. And it turns into this whole like fond farewell of Woody. From the storyline, because Woody decides to stay with Bo.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of gets a little interesting, because the way the farewell is being done and him saying goodbye to everybody and his final words and whatnot. It's interesting, because I told you I couldn't hold it, and I was like, I needed to tell you what my theory was for this movie and that particular scene. The whole way the ending scene works out, I feel like Woody died. Like, I really do feel like Woody passed away, and this is Buzz telling him, like, it's okay, you can go, you know, go into the light, you know, go be well, my friend, and, you know, live long and prosper kind of thing. I don't know.
Okay, like, well, you can't live long and prosper if you're dead.
Well, that's what Spock says before he dies. Okay, get it right. Come
okay,
on.
Okay, that was a specific scenario and has nothing to
you
do with
you call yourself
about.
A Trekkie.
I don't.
You nerf herder.
How dare you?
But it's one of those situations where it feels extremely like on the nose. I'm watching it, and like I told you yesterday, I was getting some extreme like Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King ending vibes, like how Frodo and Samwise and all the hobbits are there saying goodbye to Gandalf as he's about to sail away with the last of the elves going to the Undying Lands, essentially to spend the rest of their days. And Gandalf turns on and is like, Frodo, are you coming? And everybody turns to Frodo and like, what do you mean? And Frodo's like, yeah, I've been dealing with stuff and I'm bouncing. And everyone's like, oh my God. And they're all hugging and, you know, giving them squeezes and just, you know, whatever.
Squeezes.
I don't know. They're whatever hobbits.
They're called
do.
Hugs.
Is that what they're called? Okay. Whatever you call them. Hey, you do you, boo boo. So they're giving them these hugs. And, and ultimately, they have to say goodbye to Frodo. That was completely blindsiding them. Here's the thing. This feels like they're all saying goodbye to Woody, and Woody's passing on. Like, I don't know. This just feels not
so
on the level.
When people move away, are they just dead to you? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, yeah, aren't they to you? No, it's more of like a sense of the way they phrase it, the way the sentiments behind it, the way, like, it feels very... Okay, here's a more current example. Okay. It feels very Endgame-esque. Like when Pepper is telling Tony, like, we're going to be okay, Tony. We're going to be okay. It's all right. And then he passes, and it's like, yeah, that's what it feels like.
Okay. The thing that's different is that these one's characters...
One's animated and one's... They're both Disney fans. You can't change it. They're both from Disney.
Okay. The thing that's different between these two characters
Go
is...
Go ahead.
One's a human and one's a toy. Toys do not have rights to just, like, drive across the country and be like, hey, guys, what's up? Like, it's kind of like America in, like, the 1700s.
It's kind of like America.
You couldn't just drive from New York to...
I feel like I should have, like, the national anthem going back.
You couldn't just drive to New York to San Francisco. If people moved away, it was like they died.
Oh, Spencer, it's because of your, you know, you kid.
You are just... So lucky this is an audio-only podcast. You're the biggest jerk. Everyone, he's the biggest jerk. Just so you know. So rude. All right. Hurry this up. I want to leave.
No, but okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm done.
I can't catch my breath.
Oh, man.
Okay, people can go by themselves, going from one point to the next, back in the 1800s or whatever. What do you mean?
Yeah, well, like, do you know how hard it was to get, like, far distances? Like, that's kind of what the toys are going through. They can't get across, like, large distances by themselves. So it's like he died.
Duke
even
Kaboom
could have. Duke Kaboom has made a 40-foot jump.
That's right.
That's never right. Replace an he RV traveling at 65 miles an hour down a highway.
Exactly. You know what? I don't know, though. Like, it just feels that way. Like, it feels very much in the vein of, like, oh, you know, we are retiring a character, so this is how we're going to retire him. And that's why I say, like, it feels like this should be the last one. But then it's Pixar and Disney, or Disney Pixar.
See, here's the thing. Like, they've changed the dynamic. Woody has been, like, one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a five, like, they'd either have to have it without him following whatever Buzz in that law is doing, or it's without Buzz in that law and it's following whatever Woody and Bo Peep are doing. And... both scenarios are just missing something core to, like, the franchise.
Yeah.
Because, like, it started off, it was, like, Woody and Buzz, like, head-to-head. Like, that's kind of one of the main dynamics of this movie franchise is Woody and Buzz being together. So, it would just be bizarre if there's a Toy Story 5 and you're having to deal without one of them.
Yeah. Which I agree wholeheartedly, so... That's why I'm hoping with this whole... Because you look at it this way, the premise of Toy Story 3 deals with the macro level of change, the larger outside version of change, which is, you know, Andy moving to college and the toys needing to find, you know, a place to be or a place to stay.
Mm-hmm.
This film deals with the micro change, the change that is on the smaller scale with the toys. And I don't know, it just feels like it's a cop-out to be like, okay, yeah, we're killing off Woody, we're going to continue this story, we're going to bring in a new, you know, which that would be even worse, like if they're just
a
like
replacement. They just brought in a new Woody doll. It's just another
gosh
who has none of the experiences. That would be
horrible.
Awful. Just awful.
I swear they better not. That sounds like something they would do. They better not.
No, that doesn't sound like a Pixar thing. That sounds like, you know, DreamWorks.
I don't know. I mean, hey, I don't know if you ever heard the story. There was an actual idea for Toy Story 2 that was drawn out and storyboarded and everything, but they ended up dumping the idea for something else, for the actual Toy Story 2 storyline. Mm-hmm. But in the original idea, apparently the Buzz Lightyear dolls were getting recalled.
Oh, I think I saw part of that.
Yeah, back to like Taiwan or whatever. And so Mom ends up shipping Buzz back to Taiwan. But instead of them fixing the dolls to be repaired due to the recall, they were destroying them. And the toys end up going and saving Buzz from getting destroyed, essentially.
Wait, this would have been a story about how the toys went to Taiwan.
Exactly. Which would have totally been in line with the way Cars 2 went, which was horrible. Where, yeah, that was a bad movie.
That's interesting. I also think it's interesting they thought they could get the toys to Taiwan and back without anyone noticing all the toys were missing.
I mean, hey, they fly first class. You really don't tell who's there. But needless to say, I have a theory. Mm. This is my theory.
Okay.
None of the events that are happening in Toy Story 4 are real.
Okay.
They're all just the mindset, the last fleeting thoughts of a then being incinerated Woody at the end of Toy Story 3, and all the toys ended up dying. Oh my God. The only one who actually made it out alive was Buzz, and Buzz is carrying this Woody doll, the remnants of it, probably just his molten head, and he's telling Woody it's okay, she's gonna be okay. Probably talking about, I don't know, he probably said he and he mistook it as a she. Like, and that's what's happening. And that's why none of the events happen in this movie. None of it matters. It's not gonna, it's whatever. And yeah, that's the end of the movie. They're all dead.
No. Just no.
Oh, why not? Why doesn't that work?
Man, that's a real, where do we begin? Like, there's nothing. Where do we begin? Even in this, okay. The problem with your story is, one, we have no defined beginning and end to toys, or like when they stop being toys or when they start being toys. So it's kind of hard to have like final last minutes, because like even though they were going into that incinerator, they might have been fine as some conglomerate entity just melted together. We don't know.
No, we don't.
Which is kind of terrifying. Like, plus, like, also, like, okay, so it's Woody's dying dream.
Yep.
Or something. Why was he dreaming about the parts he wasn't there for?
Because it's all just in his imagination, and it happens. And, of course, at the end of his little illusion of a dream in that split second, of course he's going to want to be back with Bo, the toy that God knows where she went. Like, don't you think of it kind of like how convenient it was that she was in the exact same place that he was going to be? Do you remember the episode of Futurama where the recall for the bending units happened and Bender had to go back to get a recall done because of the new robot that came out? And he ends up getting like attached to the thing, and he has this whole scenario happen in his mind where those new units end up being like the best thing ever, and it all ends up becoming just like a, like in his head.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that one.
Well, this is similar in that situation. It's all just happening in Woody's head in that split second as he slowly fades away.
Like, I'd like to remind you that even though that sounds right up Disney's alley, this is still technically a Pixar movie, and they still kind of have their own style that's not so dark.
They had four Slappy dolls and a big doll who wanted to rip out the voice box of another toy.
That's not scary, that's terrifying.
Thank you. So, mine's plausible.
Oh, I'm not going to agree with that.
So, before we wrap this up, any other last little tidbits that you wanted to bring up?
No, I think we covered all the good stuff.
I did want to mention there was a ton of great little Easter eggs, and mind you, we didn't get a chance to go through all of them, but like, there was a ton of stuff in this movie.
There's too many. Like I was looking at an article, and it was like, oh, yeah, this and this and there. I was like, how on earth did I miss some of these things? Like, yep. I should recognize that.
Yeah. Like, you got the one I had mentioned to you when we were in the theater. You could see VHS tapes of that were listed as Lifted, which is the Pixar short about the alien trying to abduct the guy, managing all the little knobs. Mm-hmm. And then underneath him was Knick Knack, which is the Pixar short of the snow globe. And that was really fun to see. That was cool. Another great little Easter egg was the tin toy that opens the secret hideout to where Duke Kaboom is at. Mm-hmm. The one that's talking to Bo.
Yeah.
He talks to him through the music. One of the best little hidden Easter eggs for me was actually the Easter egg of the little Obi-Wan toy. Mm-hmm. There's an actual original Obi-Wan toy, and the other one is a Ponda Baba, which the Ponda Baba is the character in the Star Wars movie A New Hope that is at the bar and gets his hand chopped off or his arm chopped off by Obi-Wan. Now, in the movie, in the Toy Story 4 movie, you have Obi-Wan Kenobi, this little toy who has this little stick, and he's swiping at Ponda Baba, and he hits him hard enough, and his arm falls off. And it's hilarious. It's like, that is so great. That is such an awesome little cameo, like a little Easter egg. It is perfect. I love that scene. It's maybe a half a second long, but it's probably one of my favorite scenes. What other Easter eggs did you find?
Yeah. So I saw a photo of Toro in this movie, and I was like,
oh,
I didn't see him. I was like, I was mad about that. I kind of want to go back and see it now.
Anything else?
No.
Here's the thing. One of the things that you kind of have learned when it comes to Pixar movies is what they like to do is they like to insert into their Pixar movies images or things from an upcoming Pixar movie. So like Cars 3 had a race car who was from the little town where Coco takes place. Because like there's a scene where like, oh, are you homesick? He's one of the race cars that's training. Oh, are you homesick? And she puts a quick video of his home, you know, and wherever the little boy's from in Coco. And he gets all excited. Like, oh, and it's the town. There's been other things where like certain characters, like in Inside Out, you have one of the dinosaurs from...
a good dinosaur.
The good dinosaur. When the car is rolling and it ends up like hitting, like the dad doesn't put the emergency brake in that one, and it hits one of the dinosaurs. I'm wondering, there was a scene in the beginning of the movie when Woody goes to see Bonnie at kindergarten where he hides behind a lunchbox. And that lunchbox has like this reptilian-looking soldier on it. Mm. And it's interesting because the next Pixar movie to happen is Onward, which is a quote-unquote fantasy suburban kind of universe type movie.
It's a very interesting genre sound.
It is. It's like all... Have you seen the trailer for it?
Yeah, yeah, they played it before this movie.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So like... But this reptilian creature, it looks like a soldier and it has a name on it. And I didn't catch the name of the actual thing, but I'm wondering if that's going to be something to look forward to in Onward. Because like I said, I didn't see really much of anything else throughout this movie that nodded towards that movie because that's the next one coming out. But who knows?
Well, there are actually two Pixar movies coming out next year, so it could have something to do with that other one.
What's the other one?
It's a movie called Soul.
Soul, that's right. But there's no artwork for it yet.
There's a logo.
Yeah, but it looks just like... Yeah, like it almost looks like Inside Out.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, hopefully it's got something. Apparently it takes place in New York City. So I don't know. I didn't see anything that remotely looked close to something from that. But I guess we'll find out as more information comes out. So another real quick Easter egg before I forget. One of the funnest things is from the first film, you hear about these toys called Combat Carls. Because that's what Sid is blowing up. You know, they're like, oh no, Sid's out there again. They're like all hiding and like, and Sid straps like a bunker blaster or bunker buster or some type of firework to the Combat Carl. And then he blows it up. That's when he's like, oh, this doesn't have to do with you Space Rangers, just us toys. And either way. Well, you get to revisit the Combat Carls in this one, and they're a lot smaller than I remember. But either way, the Combat Carls, there's three of them, are voiced by the incredible Carl Weathers. And you cannot get cooler than that. That is the best thing ever. So, but wrapping up this little review, let's go ahead and go across the table.
Yes.
We're not going around it anymore.
Yep, it's just me. I'm the only one across from you now.
So, Spence, does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles?
Ooh, yeah, this film passes for me. It does a great job of holding up, you know, what a Toy Story movie is supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
And also does a great job of just bringing along a whole cast of, like, new characters that are very interesting, very funny, and I just love that they had Key and Peele just back in. Like, seriously, that was like the thing that made me so happy throughout this movie.
Did you hear the story they told on, sorry to cut you off, but did you hear the story they did on Jimmy Fallon?
Mm-mm.
So they went on Jimmy Fallon and was like, they were talking about the movie and they were telling him that they just presented him with a bunch of lyrics and during the filming of it, and they're like, can you do this song for us? And they're like, oh yeah, just tell us. And he's like, no, we don't have a song yet for it, but we need you to create a song out of these lyrics in the next few minutes. So they ended up coming up with lyrics to a song that they sang for about 30 minutes, and they only took like a few seconds, of the like 5-10 seconds out of it. That's the song that they're singing when they're going to get a kid.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's hilarious. It works really fun. So that's one of the magic parts about that duo. They're just so incredible and so like flexible. So
yeah, no, those two are amazing. Yeah, I will give this movie a 4 out of 5. It was really good.
Wait, you said it passed, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it passed. Cool. All right. Sorry, I got caught up in my Key and Peele story. The film passes for me. This is one of those types of movies where, with the expectation set of what has already been established prior to, I can actually say this film meets my expectations. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surpass my expectations, and that's one of the things that I did want to mention. This film is not better than Part 3.
No, I'd say it's in line with it.
It's in line. Maybe, I think...
Well, except not as depressing.
And not, it's not as, like... It does exactly. It doesn't kind of punch you in the gut as hard as Part 3 does. So, but it's still a great movie, nevertheless. So the film passes for me, and I'm going to have to give it a 4 and a quarter. Okay. I'll give it a 4 and a quarter. The quarter for Giggles McDimples, whatever. She was hilarious. Ally Mackie is so fun. And the rest of the cast and everybody else in this movie, it just made this experience like a blast from the past for me. So high marks for this movie. This movie was great. And please, Pixar, if you're listening, no more Toy Story movies. Please.
Yeah, I'm kind of on that train too.
So that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check out all of our previous episodes at our website at filmlosophers.com. And you can let us know what you thought about this movie. Did you like it? Did you not like it? What are your thoughts on Toy Story 4? Drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Before we go, we want to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. You got Annabelle Comes Home. Talk about this week. Oh my gosh. Between Annabelle and then Child's Play last week. Annabelle Comes Home and Yesterday. So these films drop this upcoming Friday, so head over to your local theaters and check them out. Yesterday actually looks really good.
It does look very interesting.
Excuse me. So yeah, check out those movies. Unless you're on this toy kick, then you got Child's Play, you got Toy Story 4, and you got Annabelle. You got three movies to choose from to talk about toys.
Okay.
I'm just saying. All right. Well, as we said, this wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. So Until next time, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence. It's just us.
Class dismissed.